evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 25th, 2020. The U.S. Secretary of State visits Sudan.
This is a very highly significant visit because it's the highest ranking official to visit Sudan since the fall of President Omar al-Bashir back in April of 2019.
And relatives of a senior police officer killed in South Sudan demand justice.
We were playing chess there, so General Bior came and sat near us. He started to narrate how a soldier had threatened to kill him to avenge late Lord Marine a day before.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo arrived in the Sudanese capital Khartoum Tuesday and held meetings with Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. Mr. Pompeo flew from Israel during his ongoing tour that includes Israel, Sudan, Bahrain, and the United Emirates. Hamdok put out a tweet shortly after his meeting and said he had, quote, direct and transparent conversation with Secretary Pompeo regarding delisting Sudan from the state sponsor of terrorism list, and also discussed relations between the two countries and U.S. support to civilian-led government in Sudan. Nabil Biagio spoke to Suleiman Baldo, senior analyst at the Enough Project, about the importance of Pompeo's visit to Sudan.
This is a very highly significant visit because it's the highest ranking official to visit Sudan since the fall of President Omar al-Bashir back in April of 2019. It indicates U.S. support for the transition to democracy in Sudan and the transition of Sudan to rule of law and peace. And it's also a form of indirect support for the civilian-led cabinet in its efforts to steer Sudan to a civilian-led governance after decades of rule by military junta and military elites under Bashir's 30 decades rule.
Yeah, the United States have made clear gestures and lent support to the civilian-led government in Sudan. But observers like yourself have always said that unless top ex-officials and military figures in Sudan, including ousted President Omar al-Bashir, face justice for crimes against the Sudanese people, there will be no real change in Sudan. Do you still feel the same now that a top Trump administration official has visited Sudan?
If we look at it from the perspective of the bilateral relations between Sudan and the U.S., there has been support from the establishment, from the administration, but not at the high level of the, you know, of President Trump, for example, or Vice President Pence, or even Pompeo, to, you know, the Secretary of State until now. There has been phone calls, but, you know, expressing goodwill and readiness to support transition to Sudan and, you know, an increase in certain investments in humanitarian efforts and in democracy support. But not sufficient support to really achieve what the Sudanese want, which is the administration's focus on expediting the rescission of Sudan's classification as a state sponsor of terrorism. And that is what is hurting and continue to hurt the chances of democracy in the country.
Mr. Pompeo flew into Sudan directly from Israel. This is the first time in 15 years and is expected to raise eyebrows. Why did he do it, and what message is he trying to send?
This is a promotion by the Trump administration of a success it had, or so it deems, in international diplomacy, which is the normalizations of relationships between the various Arab Gulf country to establish official relationships with Israel. In a way, he's trying to promote normalization between Israel and as many as possible Arab and North African and Arab Gulf countries with Israel.
Reports have surfaced about an imminent normalization deal between Sudan and Israel. And Sudan's head of state, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, had an unannounced meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister in Uganda back in February. It seems Sudanese officials are working hard to keep negotiations with the Israeli government top secret. Why is that?
I believe the meeting between Burhan and Prime Minister Netanyahu in Entebbe, Uganda, in last February, was, you know, driven by a pragmatic, intelligent opportunism from the side of Burhan. And the message, I believe, he communicated to Prime Minister Netanyahu was to help in the process of lifting Sudan's name from the terrorism list, which is very, you know, essential and a strategic demand for the Sudanese.
So what does this move by Pompeo and everything else mean for the future of the Sudanese-Israeli relations, if any?
I don't think that the Sudanese see a necessary connection between the two. They have an immediate, pressing, and essential demand from the U.S. to translate its promises of support for transition to democracy in Sudan into actions by expediting the lifting of Sudan from the state sponsor of terrorism.
That was Suleiman Baldo, senior analyst at the UNAF project. He was speaking to my colleague Nabil Biagio here in Washington earlier today. Still on Sudan, the military and the civilian components of the Sudanese transitional government are struggling to control the country's economy. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok says the military is in control of about 200 companies operating outside the country's public financial system. But the head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, denies the military dominates the economy. Burhan blamed the executive branch of the government for doing very little to revamp the economy. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Tension surfaced Saturday when Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok addressed the nation to say he is trying to develop economic reforms, but more than 70% of the country's public funds are not controlled by the Ministry of Finance. Hamdok said more than 200 Sudanese companies are managed by the military and their revenues cannot be traced.
Our government has been so concerned about this issue and we have started practical steps forward on how to resolve it. Based on the agreement among all structures of the transitional authority to have a full control of the Ministry of Finance on the public funds.
Hamdok says he cannot initiate the economic reforms when the finance ministry controls only 28% of the public funds. He says citizens are still suffering on a daily basis because of economic distortions left over from the previous administration. General al-Burhan refuted those claims during an address on Monday to Sudanese soldiers. Al-Burhan admits the military runs industrial companies, which are public assets that should be managed by the Minister of Finance, but claims Hamdok has failed to initiate a plan to solve the country's economic crisis.
We have asked them on several occasions to come and seek our support because we have experienced people who are capable of managing the economy and dealing with market. We have offered them all possible ways of cooperating with these companies. We need to offer technical support to them so that all of us are able to provide our citizens with basic services. Our citizens have been affected so much and this is due to a clear failure and lack of proper plan.
Sudanese economist Abdallah Ramadi also blames Hamdok for failing to revive the economy and says Hamdok should not blame the army for the country's economic problems. Ramadi argues it is not unusual in this region for the military to manage industrial companies. Ramadi argues it is not unusual in this region for the military to manage industrial companies.
No army in the world that does not have some production units belonging to it, especially for the military needs. They cannot go and get ammunition from abroad, so they were producing their own ammunition.
Haj Hamad, a political science lecturer at Khartoum University, says he's not surprised to hear the military and civilian components of the government bickering over the country's economic woes. Hamad says for the past three decades, the military has been controlling all financial assets of the country and therefore taking it away from them will not be easy.
If you are enjoying such kind of power, and then you have a peaceful revolution. They will continue doing the same things they were doing before the revolution, enjoying the same political and economic powers.
Hamdok admitted Saturday that his government is still struggling to revive the economy, something he says is not easy to do after the vacuum of economy created by the previous administration. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
And in Juba, rebel groups at the Sudanese peace talks have pulled out of talks, protesting the presence of Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo at the venue of the talks. Chief negotiator of a faction of the rebel SPLM North asked mediators at the talks to bring another Sudanese official to act as the government's chief negotiator. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Hamar Amon, chief negotiator of the Abdallah Aziz El Helu faction of the SPLM North, says his rebel group will not be part of the peace talks unless the mediators expel Sovereign Council member Gerald Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo from the talks. Hamon says Dagalo, who heads the Rapid Support Forces, should be replaced by another government official.
نحن موقفنا اليوم واضح.
Our justification is that his forces committed crimes against civilians all over Sudan, and he is not worthy to negotiate peace in the Sudan.
President Salva Kiir's security advisor, Tutkew Galwak, the chief mediator at the Sudan peace talks, told reporters in Juba on Friday he was suspending talks between the government and the SPLM North faction indefinitely until the new demand is addressed.
We are not taking any side, and my side has the right to pull out if they are not convinced with anything in the talks. We, as the negotiation committee, have resolved that talks with SPLM North Al-Helu group is suspended until we finish consultation with the leadership of SPLM and the government of Sudan.
Gadluak says the Al-Helu faction's new demand is unfortunate and comes at a time when the warring parties were about to conclude the talks.
The other groups like SPLMN, Malik Agar and the rest in the other parts of Sudan will continue with the talks as usual until we reach the final signing of the peace deal.
Gadluak says negotiators of the SPLM North, Abdallah Aziz El Helu faction, will remain in Juba as the mediators consult Sudanese government officials.
We want this peace to be inclusive with all the warring parties in the Sudan so that we have a comprehensive peace and anybody should bring all their demands on the table.
Sudanese government spokesman Faisal Mohamed Saleh did not answer repeated calls to comment on this story. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Relatives of a South Sudanese police general who was gunned down over the weekend in Juba are calling on the government to apprehend the killers. The spokesman for the South Sudan People's Defense Force confirmed the killing and says investigations are underway to determine the motive behind the killing. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Eyewitnesses say Police Brigadier General Bior Ajo Bior was killed Sunday evening near the Sirkat military barracks at a location where senior army officers normally play cards and chess. Aboy Garang, a relative of the late general, was present at the time of the shooting and describes what happened.
We were playing chess there, so General Bior came and sat near us. He started to narrate how a soldier had threatened to kill him to avenge late Lual Marine a day before. And as he was narrating this issue, the same soldier that threatened him came and immediately opened fire. We immediately ran for our lives, but unfortunately, General Bior was shot there with 4 bullets and died on spot.
A boy says the killer remained at the scene for nearly 3 hours without being arrested, something he says makes the victim's relatives believe it was a targeted killing. Garang urged authorities to investigate Bior's murder.
We believe that the murderer was not acting alone. There must be someone who sent him to come to kill this person. We need the government to find out why this man killed a high-ranking official.
South Sudan Army spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kwong confirms General Bior was killed by a soldier with the South Sudan People's Defense Force, identified as Sergeant Apukich Atiang, but says a motive has yet to be established.
This person was shot and killed by that person you had just mentioned. The reasons I do not know. Maybe we won't know until a kind of investigation is carried out.
Major General Daniel Justin, a spokesperson for the South Sudan National Police Service, says the armed assailant was later attacked by unidentified people and found unconscious on the side of a road in Shirkat. Justin says the assailant later died in Juba Military Hospital.
The mob actually attacked the suspect, and then when police reached, we got him beaten and he was unconscious. On the way to the hospital, he lost his life. Now we launch an investigation to find out exactly the motives behind the killing, because he was targeting the Major General, because in the guard's place, there were many people, but he targeted the victim.
Justin says the general opened a case with police the day before he was killed, complaining that a soldier was threatening to kill him. He says an arrest warrant was issued for the soldier, but he could not be found. Justin urged relatives of the deceased and the public to allow the law to take its course.
We are telling the public to be patient until the investigation comes out. We will know the motives. If there is a revenge, if there is any motive behind it, if there are witnesses, if there are what, they are to come up to tell the police exactly what have happened.
Last week, another South Sudanese army sergeant killed two bodyguards of another general serving in the South Sudan People's Defense Force. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the world now has more than 23.6 million confirmed cases of COVID-19. That's according to statistics compiled by Johns Hopkins University in the United States. Can corruption and coronavirus live in the same room? Stay tuned for an answer to that important question right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your most valuable possession?
My valuable possession right now will be my laptop, because I have a lot of confidential documents on it that are very dear to me and I can't afford to lose right now.
I think my smartphone that my dad bought for me. Yeah, I treasure it so much because it was so expensive and I was so happy.
Being in school means so much to me. Yes, I know I've not yet finished, but I'm struggling to reach there because I know it is important to me and it will be something good to me.
My most valuable possession is a photo I took with an important personality in the entertainment industry, and it's an important possession to me because anytime I look at it, it encourages me and inspires me to attain higher heights.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Civil society activists in Kenya took to the streets on Monday to demand that the government take action against officials from the Ministry of Health accused of misusing COVID-19 pandemic funds. The Kenya's Ministry of Health is accused of allegedly stealing and selling COVID-19 kits to neighboring countries and private hospitals in Kenya. As Maureen Ojembo reports from the Kenyan capital Nairobi, opposition leaders have asked the government to form an investigative committee to look into the allegations.
Down with Uhuru, down!
Down!
Down with Uhuru Kenyatta, down!
Down!
Down with Uhuru Kenyatta, down!
Down!
Uhuru Kenyatta must resign.
At least 25 lobby groups have teamed up to petition the government to put up measures that will assure Kenyans transparency and credibility in the Ministry of Health while dealing with COVID-19 funds. Already, the Ministry of Health has distanced itself from the allegations that they have sold protective equipment donated by donor communities to combat COVID-19 pandemic to the neighboring countries and Kenya's private hospitals. Kenyans have taken it to the streets, accusing the government of doing business while Kenyans are suffering. Masese Kamunche, a human rights activist in Nakuru County, led residents in engaging police in running battles yesterday, Monday, as they demanded for accountability of COVID-19 funds in the county.
70% of funding to healthcare comes from donors here in Nakuru. Level 1 and level 2 of healthcare services are 100% supported through donor funding. Because of theft that is happening in this county, because of theft that is happening in Kenya, donors are withdrawing their support. And as we said, when that withdrawal happens, it's the poor people will die. Comrades power!
Another activist from Kisumu County, Boniface Akach, speaking during yesterday Monday's demos, said that as young people, they will not allow Kenyans to suffer because of graft and asked for accused persons on corruption at the Ministry of Health to resign.
This is part of a national campaign that is made up of Kenyans and anybody in this country who is tired, who is mad, and who wants to take action about the continued rampant looting of public resources, about the looting of COVID funds. Anybody who is tired and mad enough and ready to come out and save this country. As young people whose future of this country is in our hands, we are not going to let Kenya die for us. We are ready to die for Kenya.
On the other hand, the opposition co-leader Musalia Mudavadi has asked President Uhuru Kenyatta to probe the theft allegations at the Ministry of Health. Mudavadi said that Kenya is at the verge of losing support from donor community if proper measures are not put in place to fight graft at the Ministry of Health.
The only appropriate mechanism via which to get to the bottom of what is ailing the health sector is for the president to appoint a judicial commission of inquiry. Only such inquiry will soften the hearts of our development partners who threaten to abandon us at our hour of most need because of our insatiable dishonesty.
Already, Kenya has received 220 billion Kenya shillings from development partners to help fight COVID-19 pandemic. Demands for accountability in the use of millions of dollars allocated for COVID-19 interventions continue to gather momentum, with the Commission's Administrative Justice calling on government to address the issue. Reporting for viewers, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Still on COVID, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has written a strongly worded letter to his ruling African National Congress, saying it stands accused of being the top perpetrator in the massive looting of COVID-19 funds that has triggered national anger. The Special Crimes Investigative Unit is probing hundreds of companies. Tuso Komalo reports from Johannesburg.
In the letter to the party he leads, Ramaphosa says party members and government officials fingered in the COVID-19 corruption saga have committed unforgivable betrayal. He says there are strong allegations that tender for COVID-19 relief and personal protective equipment have been irregularly given to individuals associated with the ANC and civil servants. In some cases, companies have been awarded tenders based on friendship, conflicted relationships, family connections, and promises of kickbacks. Political analyst Kaya Stolle says while the letter is unusual and raises critical issues, it will achieve very little.
It's an important political step and it's an important for public perception, but I don't think that any of the people that are planning on stealing a rand or two tomorrow are now going to suddenly say, oops, there's been a letter released, let me think differently. It just doesn't work like that.
Ramaphosa is challenging his party to admit it remains deeply implicated in the corruption saga that has exploited a grave health, social, and economic crisis. Another political analyst, Karima Brown, says while Ramaphosa is talking tough and candidly, the corruption problem in the party is larger than a mere letter.
Every single day, we are inundated with allegations and, in fact, some instances, hard proof of senior ANC leaders that are involved and implicated in corruption. The African National Congress's DNA has become affected by corruption.
Ramaphosa wants all party and government officials facing corruption allegations to account to the party's integrity commission or face disciplinary processes. He is proposing suspension of those refusing to voluntarily step down. The ANC president also wants party leaders and public representatives to undergo a lifestyle audit to see if the wealth they have was legally obtained. Ahmed Kathrada Foundationist Nishan Balton says the ANC should give thanks to COVID-19 restrictions that have restrained South Africans from flooding the streets to vent their anger over the massive corruption.
You possibly would have seen thousands of South Africans into the streets demonstrating that anger. What I think is different now is the scale and the depth of this anger. What is at stake is not just the looting from COVID-19, it's the entire program of democracy, and we can't allow that.
Ramaphosa says he has ordered the Special Investigating Unit to probe all tender fraud involving COVID-19 funds and act without fear or favor towards anyone found in the wrong. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with Abdul Allison singing about a good wife. We've been listening to Abdul Allison with the song about a good wife. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap Practice social distancing and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine center because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Darubini, sikimu siyete.